I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year. For this New Year's weekend, I thought I would bring some humor to the show. Not mine, but that of actor and comedian John Lovitz. I interviewed John earlier this year. I enjoyed this interview, as you'll hear me laughing throughout. It was an hour-long interview that we cut to 26 minutes. You may know John Lovitz from his years on Saturday Night Live, or some of the many movies he's been in, including the Penny Marshall movie, A League of Their Own, where he played baseball scout Ernie Cappadino. John talks about his experience on Saturday Night Live, the comedy roast, and his early years learning his trade. Here is my conversation with John Lovitz. Welcome.
Thank you.
You were born in Tarzana, and you didn't have far to get to Hollywood for sure. Your father was a doctor. Coming from a Jewish family, were you expected to follow that career, or were you funny as a kid and comedy was your destination?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, I was like every kid. Baseball was the big sport, and Little League was huge. In the San Fernando Valley, there's probably like 100,000 kids playing baseball. I mean, growing up, I wanted to be Willie Mays, the baseball player. I was obsessed with baseball until I was like 15, and then I realized I wasn't good enough. And then I started doing plays at that age, and I seen Woody Allen's movie, Take the Money and Run, his first movie when I was 13. So I remember thinking, I want to be a comedian like Woody Allen. And so then I focused on that. And my father was a very successful doctor. I didn't feel like I could compete with him in that field. But to his credit, I'd ask him, like, do you want me to be a doctor? He goes, no, I would never tell you what to do. You have to, if you thought I would love it, it would be great, but you have to choose what you want to do. Because he was kind of forced to do that, so he said, I'll never do that. I think he liked it. He was very successful at it.
So this comedy thing did work out for you. Who were your early influencers? You said Woody Allen. Who then did you kind of...
Well, Woody Allen, and then I saw the movie Lenny, about Lenny Bruce, starring Dustin Hoffman when I was 16. I'd never heard of Lenny Bruce, and so the movie was so great, and Dustin's performance was so great, that I just said, man, I want to hear the real guy. So I went to the record store. Weird they don't have it anymore, but I went to the record store, and I bought some Lenny Bruce albums, and then I discovered that Woody Allen had an album. It was called the Woody Allen, the Nightclub Years, 1964 to 1968, so I bought that, and I would listen to their albums. I went to college at UC Irvine. I lived in a fine arts dorm, Prado, and so they'd have a talent night. So I would do Woody Allen and Lenny Bruce's routines in my dorm. But I was studying drama at UC Irvine, and then I got my degree. And I took class. This guy, Tony Barr, who was great for working in front of the camera, which a friend of mine recommended me to do for a year and a half. And I went to New York. I wasn't getting any work and for about 11 months. And I came back, and I started going to class at the Groundlings, which is a theater improv group in Los Angeles that specializes in comedy. And I was 25 at that point. And I remember thinking, all right, I'm just going to be a comedian. Because basically I was focused on straight acting up till then. I drove from where I was staying in Woodland Hills to Hollywood. And so you go, you didn't have far to go, but we'd say you're going over the hill, you know, from the valley. And to me, it was just another world, even though it wasn't so far away. And I remember getting on the freeway, and I was like, crying. I was so scared because I just thought, I'm really committing to being a comedian and no one's telling me to do this and no one knows who I am and what's going to happen. And I get to the class and I did an improv. I get on stage and teacher, a guy Randy Bennett from Texas, and he real thick accent. Well, that was good, but you could have done like this, you could have done this. And he's telling me like different ways to be funny and goof off. And I'd never heard that from a teacher. And I was just, oh man, I was just in heaven. And I go, this is the place for me. And it was the best decision I ever made. And I loved it. And, I got on the Tonight Show from the Groundlings, and that led to Saturday Night Live and everything else.
Saturday Night Live. Yeah, I want to ask you about that. But I want to go back to when you were in college and you were doing these routines that you learned. Were you making students laugh? Did you hear that laughter and that? Did you feel that?
Oh, yeah. I'd listen to their records. You know, I didn't write the material, of course. I was just doing their routines.
Right.
But I would write it out on a, like Woody Allen had a routine. It's very silly, but it's really about anti-Semitism. But it's a very funny routine about he goes to a costume party. He goes, I shot a moose. I'd write out the whole routine, and I would write like little lines like where he would like, you know, hit a word or his voice would go up or it would go down with little arrows. I was just trying to imitate him. So he'd go like, I shot a moose. I was hunting in upstate New York. And I shot a moose. You know, he'd be like that. He hit the K and he hit. Yeah, and they all got it. They all got the routine. It was really fun. But I was up there like in a white, like my white John Travolta 793 suit and a fake cigar. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I'll wear a suit and a cigar like George Burns, you know. Shot him. But, I mean, at Irvine, I was kind of, you know, and I was the class clown.
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is actor and comedian John Lovitz. Let me turn for a little bit. Your time on Saturday Night Live in the mid-80s, was that a game changer for you, your career, your checkbook, and your life?
Yeah, all that. Yeah, 100%. Everything you said, it completely, yeah, I made money. I had money. I was that famous. I had girls, you know, more than normal. It completely changed my life. The thing about it is that people who, you know, it was unfortunate. The people closest to me changed. And that was upsetting because mm-hmm. I'd always try to, like, get their approval or get them to like me. And they're like, no, no, no. And then as soon as I get the show, you know, even my own father, oh, now you're a match. I go, oh, now? Mm-hmm. You know, or a girl I like, and she says, oh, now I'm in love with you. I go, now? And a friend of mine sent me a quote of Kirk Douglas, and it said, when you become famous, you don't change, everybody else does. You don't feel any different. You know, someone says, what is it, fame? I go, well, it's nothing I feel. It's just that when somebody recognizes you, goes, oh, you're John Lovitz. I'm like, yeah. Well, to me, I mean, yes, well, that's why I am, or who you are. You know, you're Lillian. So they'll be like, someone will go, hey, you're Lillian.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I get it.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, I get it.
I appreciate it. I appreciate people saying, I love your work. Thank you. I mean, what other job does that happen? None. Where people thank you for your, you know. So there's a lot of benefits, you know. Look, let's be honest. Someone said, is it better to be famous than not? I'm like, what are you kidding? Yeah. Do people treat you differently? Or what are you, joking? Yes.
So you look fondly on your days on Saturday Night Live?
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it was really a tough job. I mean, there were days where I'd say, get me off this show. I mean, there was eight of us on the show, and it was very, very competitive between the cast and the writers. And, And if you had a lot of sketches on one week, the next week the writers wouldn't write anything for you because they were pissed. You're competing against them. You know, to get stuff on air, on a Wednesday, they'll have the read-through from 3 to 5. They submit, you know, 30 to 40 sketches. And then from that, they'll pick 14 to, you know, fully produce and make sets. So you're working all week. And then on Saturday, they have dress rehearsal and they do all 14 sketches. So dress rehearsal is always long. And then they'll cut six of those sketches, which is almost an hour of show. It's a lot. Out of 14, they're cutting almost half, six. So eight make it on air out of the 40 that you started with.
Wow. So you look fondly upon it. It did bring you, you know, more dollars and probably name recognition.
Well, it changed my life. I have a career because of it, yeah.
But it was hard.
Oh, it's a hard, very hard job. Yeah. I mean, anybody that's on that show, they go, what do you think? I go, well, they're all talented. And it's just really hard because, like, a sitcom is nothing. It's so easy. You know, and you don't have to write the character, and you're playing the same character every week.
Right.
And you're guaranteed to be in the show. So there's none of that. And it's only, like, 30 hours a week. Total, whereas Saturday Night Live is like 80 hours a week, and you're writing the show, and you're competing to get your sketches on the air, and you're basically auditioning every week to get on air. You know, it's like that. It's very tough. Then you're performing live, so which is exhilarating, but you only have one chance to do the sketch. So if you don't do it right, that's it. You could do a sketch, and you miss one joke, and then you finish and come off like, ah, crap. I mean, Dana and I would talk about it. We really cared. We really wanted to be. Not the others did, but we were doing really well. We really wanted to kill on air and be as funny as possible every time and go all out and just make the audience cry laughing, you know, every time.
You're speaking of Dana Carvey.
Right, yeah.
Let me ask you, I read that when you were in college, you learned how to write a joke. What did you learn about writing a joke? What was its importance?
Well, I don't know. I think I learned subconsciously, but A. Whitney Brown. And this other girl, Hillary Krieger, when I was in the Groundlings, this girl, Hillary Krieger, she goes, have you ever written a sketch? I'm like, no. I'd written something once in college, but not really. So she showed me the structure of a sketch and how to write it, which has like a beginning, middle, and an end, and a premise, and then, you know, and what the characters do and everything. A lot of the sketches they don't work because they're not. It's not a sketch. It's just the idea for the sketch. Well, that's a premise. Now you need a story and characters and conflicts and what do they want, and all just like you would a regular scene. So I learned that from her. And then on Saturday Night Live, I did my liar character and the first time. And then after, this electrician came up to Lauren's office. Robert Smigel, the Triumph the Insult Dog. It was his first year writing on the show. Anyway, Robert said, John, this electrician just said that Lauren, that liar thing is the funniest thing I've seen in years. And Lauren was like, oh. So he said to me, hey, let's do the liar again, but why don't you write it with A. Whitney Brown, who was, you know, a great comic. And I remember Whitney had met him. He goes, hey, I'm a stand-up. Can you watch my stuff? I go, yeah, yeah. And I kept putting him off. But finally, I sat down and watched it. I don't know why I didn't watch it right away, but I didn't. But I said, all right, let me see. So I watched him. And he goes, what did you think? Do you think it's good? I'm good. I go, good? I go, what are you? You're a genius.
Hmm.
Then there's that. I go, my God. And he was hilarious. So we would write the liar character together. And I really learned how to write jokes from Whitney. And I was good at editing, taking out the fat, you know, and honing it down. And
right.
He learned that from me. And it was a good team. And that was really fun. That was probably the highlight of the show, was really writing those sketches with him. Now that I think back on it, it was just kind of magical. And being in Rockefeller Center and in an office and the air from New York was like warm and the whole thing, you know, it was just. And then we're just trying to come up with how to be funny. That liar character, I mean, he really, I was giving credit. I did it the first time he created the character. I didn't know what to do with it afterward, and he really showed me how to expand the character and make the lie bigger, you know, more ridiculous, which is his idea. I'm crying, laughing, so make the lie huge.
You do ridiculous well. After a quick break, John talks about another talent of his, singing. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. My guest is actor and comedian John Lovitz. You've done television, you've done films, you've done stage, you've done stand-up. One of the things that surprised me is you're a singer, or you can sing, and you've sang the national anthem. Is that because you're a baseball fan, and you kind of mentioned that earlier, and are you growing up in Southern California, an Angels or a Dodgers?
Well, I grew up in, I was a Dodgers and New York Giants, because I loved Willie May.
Okay.
So I liked both teams. But, yeah, my dad wanted to be an opera singer, so he'd always play music in the house, and I just grew up singing, and what happened was I got in the movie A League of Their Own, and it was a big hit. So then I got invited at Dodger Stadium to sing a Hollywood Stars game where, you know, actors and celebrities, and you got to play in a baseball game on the field at Dodger Stadium. And, you know, I wanted to be a baseball player when I was 7 or 15. So they go, do you want to play in this? I'm like, are you kidding? To, you know, get to go play baseball on the field at Dodger Stadium was like, you know, a dream come true. I mean, oh, I never even imagined I could do it. You know, and everyone that played in that game, it was the same for them. I grew up playing baseball. We get to play at Dodger Stadium. And oh, my God. So it was fantastic. Anyway, I did it. And Gary Owens, who was on the TV show Laughing, and he was the announcer.
Yes.
He was announcing the game. And then, so one time he's doing a game, and I'm sitting next to Cuba Gooding Jr. And I go, God, I would love to be up there announcing part of the game. So Cuba goes, well, go on up, you know, I guess. So I walked by Gary. He goes, oh, hey, John, you want to, like, do some announcing? I'm like, oh, okay. So I did it, and I was getting, like, big laughs. So then the next year, they, besides him, they'd have me do something, you know, they'd have me start playing in the game and announcing some of the game. And then I wanted to sing the national anthem. So the guy, Joe Sigmund was his name. It was, him and Jack Gilardi. But anyway, they put together the game. So I called up, and I said, hey, I want to sing the national anthem. I go, I just always wanted to do it and at a baseball game. I go, I know it sounds crazy, so I'll just sing for you over the phone. And if you think it's good enough, then I'd like to do it. But if not, okay. He goes, all right. So I sang for him. He goes, oh, that's good. Yeah, you should do it. And he let me do it. I was really nervous, but I did it. Because I always wanted to sing, you know, Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave.
It's a hard
song. You know?
It's a hard song.
So now, yeah, it's hard because it has a really low note and has a high note.
Right.
So if you start the song too low or too high, especially if you start too high, that high note is like, ugh. But anyway, I did it, and you meet the organist, you know, her name's Nancy B. So you practice with her. But it's Dodger Stadium. You know, it's like, it's a huge, like, you know, you're seeing in an arena, you know, a stadium. So it's really exciting. So next thing you know, this game, I'm singing that one game, like I'm singing the national anthem. I did it like three times. So I'd sing the national anthem, and I'd play in the game, and I'd announce the game. So then they're like, you have to come. You like the whole game. I'm like, all right.
Okay.
But I was thrilled, you know. So I got to play baseball, sing, and do comedy on the mic, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned A League of Their Own, which is one of my favorite movies. You were cast as Ernie Cappadino.
Right.
Yeah. Is Grumpy your thing?
No. But that was that character. They wrote
sure.
the part for me. But see, the character, it was written really sarcastic.
Yeah.
So I had to, if I just played it like that, it would have just come off as just mean and resentful, you know. So, but the way it was written was, you know, I go, I saw you playing today. Not bad, not bad. We're doing a new league. You want to play? And you go, I don't know. I'm like, all right, don't play. No skin off my ass to be around. You don't want to play? It's fine. Stay here and milk the cows, you know. The way it's written, you figure out the character, which was like, he's a baseball scout, but they're saying, go out and find women.
Right.
And he's like, ugh, you know, all right, fine. So he doesn't really want to do it, but the owner said, you know, can you do me a favor and go find, you know, players? I'm like, all right, fine. Anyway, when you approach it like that, he's like, he's doing it, but he's reluctant, you know what I mean? But then he sees them playing, and they're not bad. So instead of going, oh, I saw you playing today, not bad, not bad, right? Like, that's how you'd normally do it. But I thought it was funnier if he, like, reluctantly admits it. So I say, like, you know, I go, oh, I saw you playing today. Not bad, not bad. You want to play? No. All right, fine, don't.
When your character goes to get the one gal that's not as attractive as
Marla Hooch. Gina,
yes, Marla. It was a good scene as well. When you were getting the girls to come and play, all were good scenes because of your delivery and your, just like you described, slightly sarcastic. I called it grumpy, but maybe it was just like you said, you got the character and you wanted it to be funny and still make the point.
Well, I don't want it to, because if I didn't do that, if he was reluctant, you know what I mean, it would have just been mean.
Okay.
He's just being mean. All right, don't play. I don't care. You know, you could do it like that.
Right.
You want to play or not? I don't. I don't care. Bye. It's not funny. It's just mean. So it was like he couldn't help. So when I say, I'm in the gym with Marla Hooch, and I say to her father, I go, because I have to get girls that are pretty, I go, can you ask her to take her hat off? And then you just deadpan. You just wait, like you're just waiting. And I wanted to do it like he was so surprised that it scared him. But, you know, it's just funny. Like, he just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, it was
like
funny.
So I said to Penny Marshall, it was great, God bless her. I go, I want to do a bunch of takes in a row, like me reacting to that, right? I go, just keep the camera. Let me try a bunch of stuff. She goes, okay. So the hat was off. And then it just was funny. He's so horrifying. He made him take a step back.
Oh. Oh, that's just not right. But it was funny.
No, I know, but it's funny. And then he looks at her and he's like, oh. It's mean, but it's funny. And I go, we'll let you know. But I knew what the next scene was, which I had to do it like that, because then the father goes,
yes.
Hey, mister, look, I know my daughter's not the prettiest girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right, that's enough. You can bring her over here. Okay, Marla. Come here. Boys, hit the shower.
That's all.
We'll let you know.
Danny, I'm sorry.
Come on, let's go. We'll miss the train. Let's move, move, move!
What's the matter?
I can't use her.
She's great. Why not? What's the problem?
You know General Omar Bradley?
Yeah.
Well, there's too strong a resemblance.
All right. You mean you ain't taking her because she ain't pretty?
Well, look who just caught up. All right, come on, let's go. Pick those suitcases up. Now, come on. I'm not kidding. Let's go. Move. Come on, one foot in front of the other.
Hey, mister.
Huh?
I know my girl ain't so pretty as these girls. But that's my fault. I raised her like I would a boy. I didn't know any better. She loves to play. Don't make my little girl suffer because I messed up raising her. Please.
And he makes the case
you're setting it up for him.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And then that guy, Eddie Jones, he passed away sadly. But you watch him in that movie. He was so good. He was so moving. It like made me cry.
Yeah, me too. But it worked because you had set him up just like you described. And because
right.
when he appeals to you, look at I raised her. I may not have raised her right, but she can play ball.
He was so good. And then I remember going, what do I? I go, I'm just going to listen to him.
My guest is actor and comedian John Lovitz. John, you've participated in Comedy Roast. I know you've done some of the roasting. What's that like, that evening or that situation? Is it brutal or is it fun?
Well, I mean, I've done it a long time. I mean, it's kind of like, there's a dividing line of those roasts, which was when they were private and then when they started putting them on TV on Comedy Central.
Right.
And they were very different because it started off, it was the Friars Club.
Right.
And so the idea was like once a year they would, and the Friars Club was just for comedians. You know, a club for comedians. And so it would start off where once a year they would pick a comedian to make fun of. And it was only for men. And it was private. And you had to pay to go. And it raised money for a charity. And then they say, you know, you have to be as, like, filthy as you can be. But no one would see it except the members. So it was just kind of like this legendary thing. You go, oh, you got to see this. We'll go to the roast. You can't believe it, you know. Or I guess people would go. I guess you'd be a kid, but it was private. You know, and back then, on like, say, you had the great comedian Jack Benny on TV and radio. You couldn't cuss or anything.
Mm.
But now he's going to be doing that, right? Because there was language restrictions on television and performing. But at this thing, there wasn't any. So people were just like, you know, it was legendary. So the first time I did one was with I went to one. They roasted Bruce Willis. And Milton Berle was the host. You know, and he'd been one of the original Fryer members.
Right.
And he was 83 at the time. But he was sharp as a tack, and he was unbelievably great. And he gets up, all right, now we're going to start. Please welcome my master of ceremonies, Milton Berle. And the whole room starts twittering, and everyone's like quiet, and they're really excited because they know they've heard about this, where these comedians are like really funny and filthy, but they've never seen it. And then he just starts, and all of a sudden he just starts with these jokes, you know, really dirty but hilarious. and he did like 8 minutes, and he was like brilliant. And I go, well, how are you going to follow that, you know? And then on Comedy Central, they started doing it where they didn't just roast the person being roasted. They'd make fun of everybody on the dais. And everybody that got up would make fun of everybody over and over. So that part, so then you're getting roasted. I'm like, hey, man, I'm not here to be roasted. But I liked it. You know, I mean, and some of the jokes, I mean, there's a difference between, like, a joke and then a joke that's, like, mean.
Yes.
And so I didn't try to do mean jokes. I tried to do jokes that were silly, that basically weren't true, you know what I mean? So then they would be so ridiculous that you'd go, it's just ridiculous, it's funny. So they're interesting, but I mean, I had fun. I mean, I did Bob Saget, who I know, and Charlie Sheen. They asked for you, and Harvey Levin from TMZ was supposed to do it, and then when he heard I was doing it, he dropped out because he was afraid of me, found out. And he should be, because he's a real jerk.
Oh. Okay, I'll leave it at that. I watched the show, Funny You Should Ask, hosted by John Kelly, and you're in the first chair. Is it a challenging show? Do you already know what's coming? Do you think that quick on your feet? Or is it just your expressions? Because the camera always pans to you for your expressions, and, you know, it's there. What's that show for you like?
Well, Byron Allen produces it, and he created it with Scott Satin, and Byron is a friend of mine, and he hired me for a sitcom, Mr. Box Office, and then he did this show, and Scott came to me and said, I want you on every show, and so I'm very grateful to both of them. You know, they've been great to me, and see, again, I go, oh, I don't know if I want to do that.
Again with
that. See, my background was always acting in movies, so I'm like, no, I'm doing stuff that's not really, I'm not doing that, you know, it's different. I go, game show, I don't know. And Scott says, well, just try it and see if you like it, you know. I go, well, all right. So I so did not want to do it, and this has never happened to me before, that it was about 3 o'clock, and Scott called me, goes, where are you? I go, I'm in the valley playing golf. Why? He goes, well, we're shooting the pilot. You're supposed to be here. And I'm like, what? It's today? I completely forgot. And I was really embarrassed. I go, oh, my, I'm so sorry. And I wasn't, like, not trying to show up. I just forgot. And that's never happened. And it wasn't because I had Alzheimer's. It was because I didn't want to do it. So I guess I just didn't. I put it out of my head. You have some clothes for me from the sitcom. It was shot at the same place because I'm in my tennis clothes. Oh, my God. So I go, it was really embarrassing. So I was in the Valley, and I had to get to Studio City, and I had to drive to Culver City. And so I go, oh, my God. So I race there, you know, and I'm Byron, I'm so sorry. And so he goes, John. I go, I'm so sorry. I go, like, what's wrong with you? I go, I'm so sorry. This has never happened. I'm so sorry. So anyway, I did the show, and then Scott goes, well, did you have fun? I'm like, yeah. I was, like, reluctant. I go, yes, because I was with a bunch of comedians, and I'm just cracking jokes, you know. It's fun to do, you know, and it's fun to see the other comics, and you get to meet new people. Like Billy Gardell, I'd never met, or Bill Engvall.
I love Billy.
They're really nice guys. Everyone's very nice, and so it's an enjoyable job. You're just sitting there in a very comfortable chair and cracking jokes, and, you know, some are written, some are made up, and all, you know.
Who or what at this point, who makes you laugh? What makes you laugh?
I mean, as far as, like, other comedians or...
Other comedians or what topics? What do you laugh about? Or are there comedians that make you laugh?
Well, you know, on SNL, I mean, I always thought Dana Carvey and Dennis Miller and Phil Hartman and Kevin Ewan were hilarious.
And today?
I mean, there's a lot of new comedians that are hilarious. I think Dave Tell is, like, brilliant. And I think Jim Gaffigan's really funny and really makes me laugh. And I mean, there's a lot of them. What is the guy's name? Felicia Sparza. Joe Coy is very funny. Joe Coy used to open for me. Now he's playing stadiums. So that's fun to see. He's great. God, there's so many. When I started doing stand-up, I was like 46 to really start doing it. And Dane Cook was great. He was very supportive. Because it was hard because everyone was like, you know, 15 years younger than me. But like Dane and Ralphie May, God bless them, best way. They're like, hey, you're doing this the right way. You're learning how to do it. Because a lot of comics, they'll be famous, but they've never done stand-up, and it's completely different, you know. And they'll just go out and just start doing shows and getting the money and not having the show. And I took about 2 years before I started headlining, which is really not that long. I just worked my way up. But, you know, I'd been doing comedy for years, so a lot of the stuff I'd already learned. You know, I knew how to write jokes. I had timing. I had delivery, but I didn't know how to, like, put an act together, you know, of a length, and you just start slow and you slowly add to it. I didn't know, you know, how to use the mic right and how to work the audience by yourself. All that stuff I had to learn. So, and the timing of that.
All plays a part for sure.
Now it's like 16 years later. I mean, I'm way better now.
That's good to know.
Well, 17 years into it, yeah, you go, what was I thinking?
What new projects are on your plate? What do you have going forward?
Well, nothing right now. I mean, the coronavirus has kind of stopped everything. You know?
Yeah.
So I haven't done stand-up since the weekend of the Oscars in February. You know, I did work on a single-camera sitcom called The Poe Twins. It stars Kevin Sorbo and Barry Bostwick, and I did one show of that, and Tia Carrere got cast in it. And it's funny, but I did that. But not, you know, you go on the set, and you have to be tested before you get there, and you're wearing masks, and there's a nurse, and...
Wow.
And then everyone's wearing masks all the time, so they say, okay, ready to shoot, and then you take your mask off, and, you know, you put it in a plastic bag, and they shoot, and then your mask goes right back on.
Wow.
Everyone's been tested, and everything's disinfected, and, you know, it's different.
It definitely is. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you.
To learn more about actor and comedian John Lovitz, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. Thanks to those who have shared Broadway shows with me. The submissions have been great, but I'd like to hear from more listeners. Share your favorite Broadway musical, why it's a favorite, and one song from the show. I'll share some of the responses on a future episode of Lifestyles when we talk Broadway. Share your Broadway musical with me at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go.
Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wad, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Here's to a safe and healthy new year. Cheers, and bye for now.